Welcome to the Voice of Truth on 103.3 WAJR-FM, the radio broadcast ministry of Christian Apostolic Church in Clarksburg, West Virginia. And now, your host, author, teacher, and pastor, Doug Joseph.
We are so excited to tell you that Steve and Dana Grohman are coming to Clarksburg, West Virginia for a creation seminar hosted by Christian Apostolic Church. This event will take place April 28th of 2013 through May 1st, if the Lord tarries. That's a Sunday through a Wednesday. There will be five sessions, and you don't want to miss a single one. There will be two on Sunday, one at 10 a.m., the second at 6 p.m., and then sessions each night, Monday, Tuesday, and Wednesday at 7:30 p.m. Learn why that all of the scientific and archaeological evidence proves that the Bible is true. God really did create everything, including dinosaurs, in 6 days. Dinosaurs were not separated by man by millions of years. The archaeological evidence proves this, and everything that evolutionists say takes millions of years actually happens very quickly. You'll learn so much, you'll be so glad you came, and this will be one of the most exciting things that you'll get to do all year. You'll get to handle actual fossils and have a chance even to buy some, and you'll get to meet Steve Grohman of a creation seminar. Speaking of which, we've been airing portions of a prior seminar by Steve here on our broadcast, and we're pleased to bring you yet another installment. So here he is, Steve Grohman, a creation seminar. Let's roll the tape.
The evolutionists, and they got upset about it, and they targeted them. They kicked them off the school board next time, and now they're getting back on again this time. It just goes back and forth. But what happened, 1999, they didn't take evolution out of the curriculum. They didn't put creationism in. They just toned down evolution a little bit and said, hey, let's look at it objectively and critically. Well, they didn't like that. The evolutionists didn't. This article is in Nature, volume 401. The context is the Kansas School Board issue, okay? So you understand the setting and the context of this. In Nature, volume 401, look what they wrote. Even if all the data point to an intelligent designer, such a hypothesis is excluded from science because it is not naturalistic. Now, folks, look what this sentence is saying. They're saying even if all of the evidence points to the fact that there's a God that put this place here, we are still going to deny him. When you realize this kind of stuff, they're saying even if anything but God will do. You know, it is amazing. They don't agree with themselves, and they argue bitterly over all these issues, but anything but God will do in the long run by the time it makes it into these textbooks. And they even admit it in their own publications and literature. And it is incredible what's happening in this country. I want to show you how this is still current today. December, Nature again, December 2004. Folks, just the other day, relatively speaking, December 2004, look at this right here. Science bases its, this is in Nature magazine. Science bases its conclusions on empirical data, not on the authority of the Talmud, Bible, or Quran. And even though some may find it distressing that science recognizes no God, forcing it to do so will only produce bad science. Folks, they are admitting that there is no God. They will not recognize God. They are going to talk about human embryo research and morals on page 666. I'm telling you, it is chilling what's happening. This clock is ticking away, and it is absolutely vital that people get involved and get motivated. You know, when a fossil is found, it does not come with a label that says, this is what I am, and when I lived, and when I died, and how I ate, and how I got around. And it is the worldview of the person that you're looking at when you're looking at that thing, because they're explaining to you what it is they believe that thing did, and when, and how, and why, and all that stuff. Whole Biology is one of the most popular biology textbooks in this country. This is incredible. They say, how did life begin? There were no witnesses to the origin of life. You can't go back in time to see, but there are three options. Number one, ET brought life. Number two, creation. Number three, origin from non-living matter. Most scientists think that life arose on Earth from inanimate matter after the newly formed Earth had cooled, as in figure 10.1. First, random events produced stable molecules that could reproduce themselves. And then natural selection took over, and here we go. Look what it says. This chapter will examine the third option, life from non-life. The first two possibilities are not considered because they are not testable and thus fall outside the realm of science. Well, folks, where in the world is the test to show non-life turning into life? According to their very definition of what science is not, what they're going to teach is not science. But here's a step further. They say in a public school these days, you can't talk about creation. Why not when they bring it up? They can bring it up and downplay it. They can bring it up and say it didn't happen. They can bring it up and ridicule it. They can bring it up and say, if you believe in creation, you are implicitly denying the intellectual basis of science itself. They can bring it up and smack it. Folks, then somebody like me ought to be able to go in and defend it then. I'm telling you, if we're at that point in this country where we are only going to show one side of a coin, knowing full well there's another side, and we never let the kids see it, that's not education any longer. Folks, we're in the middle of indoctrination at that point. I'm telling you, we need some Christians to get into the systems. We need people to step up to the plate and get motivated. Let me give you an example. We were in Illinois just the other day. We were doing a seminar in Illinois. We sent a packet to the pastors of information, sample letters, sample this, that, and the other, you know, try to get me on radio shows, TV, whatever, sample this, that, and the other, and, you know, what we need and all that kind of stuff, 6 to 8 weeks ahead of time, usually about 6 weeks, so they have the information. We're in Illinois. Well, the week before we get there, we're doing another seminar at another church, and our phone rings, so I'll pick up the phone, answer it, and this lady introduces herself. She is the senior school board member, been on the school board for 17 years in the town, the school system, where we're going to be next week. She says, look, I want to get you in the public schools, and it's no big deal. I mean, we're all Christians around here, the whole school board, and everybody is all Christian, and I just wanted to know, do you prefer, you know, elementary, middle school, you know, high school? What? I said, all. Give me an all of them, and then if we still have time, let's start over and go again, you know, all of them. And so she said, okay. She said, well, look, what I'm going to do then, I just wanted to talk to you first, but what I'm going to do is I'm going to just run this by the superintendent. Now, he's a good, solid Christian man. In fact, he is one of the leaders in his church. And, you know, it'll be absolutely fine with him, but I want to say that it's okay with him when I talk to the principal of the high school. So I, you know, just make sure, follow the right channels, but it's no big deal. I said, okay. Next day, the phone rings, and she says, my wife answers this time. She says, look, the superintendent, who was just going to rubber stamp the thing, he wants some kind of a reference or whatever. So, I mean, we don't have much time as far as that goes now, so we gave him some phone numbers. You know, here, you can call this some public school people, you know. Okay. So we get there, and now we're setting things up on, you know, Friday and Saturday, brings things in, setting up, and this lady comes up and says, oh, so what am I going to do, the school meeting? Well, the superintendent, he wants to come out to the Sunday morning service and see how it goes. Well, you realize the Sunday morning church service is different than a Monday afternoon school meeting, you know. Oh, sure, he understands that, sure. Sunday morning shows up, he's not there. This lady says, well, he wanted me to come to the meeting and see how it goes and then report back to him. Now, folks, this is the guy that's just going to rubber stamp it. Of course, he's a good, solid Christian man and leader in his community church and everything, and, you know, it's no big deal. She's just going to get his approval first. So finally, then, I have a radio interview on Monday. So she says, the superintendent would like to speak with you, just kind of talk with you a little bit and sort of, you know, just kind of get a handle on your personality and stuff. So, okay, you want me to call him or go by? Well, no problem. I call him up. And here's the thing, folks. I call him up and ring his extension number. And he says, you know, he answers the phone. And I said, hi, this is Steve Grohman with the Creation Seminar. He said, who? I said, Steve Grohman with the Creation Seminar. He said, who? I said, Steve Grohman, a creation seminar. We're doing a series of meetings at a church. I was going to maybe come speak to the school. He says, oh, yeah, okay. How long are you going to be here? I said, well, we're just here through Wednesday now. He said, oh, that's not near enough time. I need a lot more time than that. Now, folks, here's this guy that's going to just rubber stamp. I'm just going to run it by him because he's a good, solid Christian fella. It'll be okay. And that's where the bottleneck came in right there. And here's what this man told me. I'll never forget this as long as I live. First, he said, well, I don't have near enough time. And then he said, folks, listen to this. He said, I can't have you come into the school system because we need to render to Caesar what is Caesar's. Folks, do you understand that statement? Do you hear what that is saying? This guy is saying when you put your child off in that school system, in a public school system, it's no longer your child. That child belongs to Caesar. and then they can do whatever they want, and they cannot do whatever they want. Folks, I'm telling you, it is high time that the church crowd and the community step up to the plate. It is our children the devil's after. This is a good, solid Christian man who's a leader in his community. And so, I'm telling you, we got problems in this country, big time, here today and in the devil's den tomorrow. And they're growing up, folks. I'm telling you, we have seen this repeatedly over and over. We have been in some churches four times over 10 years' time, and we are watching children grow up and falling the hardest nosedive fall you can ever possibly imagine, because we are not, people are not paying attention to what's going on with the minds of our kiddos, folks. I'm telling you, it is urgent. So many, many people, I never thought it was going to happen to me, and now here it is. And once it happens to me, it's too late. It's too late at that point. Oh, sometimes they'll come back, understand, but the bottom line is now it's already happened. We need to get involved while we barely still can. We had a seminar scheduled at a church in Kansas. This is incredible. The pastor sends us a letter to cancel the seminar in Kansas. This is March of this year. The atmosphere in Wichita has changed drastically since we spoke. Whereas the debate on creation and evolution was strong, there has been a, it's worded wrong, decidedly changed since the capture of the BTK killer. This has literally consumed Wichita and the state of Kansas. In light of these changes, I would like to try to reschedule the creation seminar for sometime early next year. That's 06. This letter was sent to me in March. March 2005, Nature Magazine. Not only is the issue creation versus evolution still strong in Kansas, folks, it made national publications, science publications. They are going to decide the curriculum by June of this year. And now we have not been given the opportunity to get into that place to help motivate some of those people, to wake them up and help take the blinders off and whatnot until maybe next year. It's too late at that time. Folks, the devil never stops. He never lets up. He never quits. But the Christian community, how can the whole mood of a church change because they caught the BTK killer? I don't even understand that comparison and that logic in my mind. It makes no sense to me. But I'm saying we need to step up to the plate, and we need to pay attention and get involved in our kids' lives. There is so much at stake. Somebody wants to know how life began. Why don't we just ask the God that put us here? He told us what He did, and He told us when He did it, and why He did it, and how He did it. It's all recorded right there. You know, I go into a public school every year in New Hampshire for 4.5 to 6 hours a day for a whole week. Every child that goes through that school system, I get to talk to them for hours during their time in that school system. A couple years ago, I was in there, and I went into one of the science classrooms, and there was a stack of these life science textbooks up on a shelf. And I asked this teacher, I said, "Sir, is that the life science book you're using in class today, this year?" He said, "Yes, it is." I said, "Could I see one of those, please?" He said, "Sure." So he takes it off the shelf, and he gave me the book. I opened it up, and I said, "Have you ever read this?" And then I looked just to make sure, you know. And he said, "I don't understand your question." I said, "I'm just asking you, have you ever read this right here on the inside front cover of your textbooks?" He said, I don't really understand the question." I said, "Okay, this is really just a yes or a no. It's really quite simple. I'm asking you, in the 28 years you've been a science teacher at this school system, have you ever once bothered to read the words that are on the inside front cover of every textbook you've ever used, every one you ever will use? Have you ever read these words?" And the guy said, "Well, no, not really. Why?" I said, "Oh man, you ought to read it. It's really funny. Folks, this has been in every textbook, always has been, always will be. Pupils to whom this textbook is issued must not write on any page or mark any part of it in any way. Footnote number one, teachers should see that the pupil's name is clearly written in ink in every book issued. Don't write on it, write on it, don't write on it, write on it, don't write on it, write on it, don't write. Teacher, I'm confused." The confusion starts on the inside of the front cover, you know. It goes for about 400 pages for about 12 years, and we look back and wonder what went wrong, you know. Wow. Hey, first grade, Merrill, do we have any first graders in the room? First grade. Anybody in the first grade? You're in the first grade. Check this out. This is a first grade Merrill Science textbook. Teacher's tip: ask the child, "How old do you think these rocks are?" Correct answer: millions of years old. How many millions does it matter? No, it doesn't even matter. Just plant that seed of millions of years old. What does a first grader know about a rock? Hey, could you please spell and define metamorphic rock for us, please? Speak up real... What do you mean, what? Could you maybe just sort of give us a thumbnail sketch, the hardness scale, how rocks form and such? Hurry, we're running out of time. Hurry. No? You know what, folks? What does a first grader know about a rock? You know what they know? Yeah, that wouldn't work. That didn't scare you, did it?
It did.
Okay. Folks, here's the thing. First graders don't know any of that kind of stuff about a rock. But you know what? If you plant that seed of millions of years, doesn't even matter how many million, just get the seed of millions of years and we'll water it down the line. You get that seed in them when they're just a first grader and you water that thing for about 12 years, they're going to grow up and believe what it is they were told. I'm just saying we need to get involved in our kids while we can. Anyway, Pastor, you want to come on up here and be nice to me, okay? But you know. All right. Well, as we get going in the second half here, I want to show you something. I want to kind of tell you something. You see this picture up here. You know, a couple of weeks after we shot this picture, that was in the Tetons, and we were in Hurricane Utah after that, a couple of weeks after that, and an 18-wheeler fully loaded with these big micro-lam floor joists, you know, the big things that better than 2x12s and all that kind of stuff, 53-foot rig with the thing hanging 13 feet off the back end, he decided to smack us and see how he'd fit in the side of the motorhome. Well, that caused a problem for us because we have a schedule. We have somewhere to be. We have somewhere to be after that. We have somewhere to be after that. This is not a recreation vehicle for us. This is not an RV. We don't have a fishing pole and a lawn chair in there. It's full-time living, and we carry rocks and books, and we've got places to be. We've got a problem on our hands now. Now, here's the funny thing. My son, he's this, this was a 2000 Winnebago, and it was 2 years old, top of the line gas model, and it was in, I guess, 2002. So anyway, Paul was, he was about eight at the time, I guess it was. Now here's my eight-year-old son. He's looking at me, he sees this mess that we have on our hands now, glass everywhere, you know, everything's all messed up. He looks at me and says, Dad, you know, you have a slide that says, and you preach about it sometimes, and it's in the Bible, and all things work together for good. And he looks at it. He said, what's the good? That's a pretty good question for an eight-year-old to ask a dad, don't you think? You know, and I said, well, you know, son, I don't know. I may not know. You know, maybe the guy was just a bozo and he did something really dumb and now we've got a problem on our hands. But maybe God did allow this to stop us. Because had this not happened, maybe we were going to be down the road somewhere and it's going to be 70 mile an hour head on with another 18-wheeler and one, two, or all three of us would have been killed. I don't know. We may never know. But one thing I do know, it's going to be okay. Now, I got to tell you, folks, in the back of my mind, I'm thinking, Lord, what are we going to do? You know, I mean, to be honest with you, I'm scared to death. You know, thinking, what is going to happen now? We've got a problem. Well, anyway, what happened? We have, the way we are, we have always been the kind of people that if we don't have the money, we don't get it. Now, that even applies to motorhomes. For instance, our first motorhome we got, we had $10,000. And we'd go to these different places and we'd say, we want to buy a motorhome. How much do you have? $10,000. They'd laugh at us, you know. You're not going to get much. And we didn't. We finally got one. It wasn't much, but it was ours. But the point is, we just ate beans and peanut butter. We saved every penny we could possibly save. And then we rode that thing for a year. Our first trip out was terrible. The thing was falling apart, but it was ours. But anyway, the next year goes by, you know, and we're saving every penny we could save, you know, and we had this one plus a little money we could trade in. We traded up. And it got to be the point where we're looking at some rather nice motorhomes over the years, you know, but all we have is our motorhome we're in now and a little bit of money. That's all we have. None more. And when we give them over that money, that means it has to be full fuel, full propane and everything because we don't have a dime left. So we can't even fill it up down the station. It needs to be full now, you know. And so anyway, and these guys, they wouldn't understand it. Salespeople, they'd go in and they say, look, you know, you're $1,300 short. We got 0.9 financing. Your payment will be $7 a month. I said, I don't care what it is. It doesn't matter. That's not the point. No. If we can't get it, if it's too much, if it's not right, then God hadn't provided for us yet. That's not for us yet. There'll be one at the next shop maybe somewhere. That's fine. I'm not upset if I can't get this one. We'll just go down the line. There'll be one down the road. That's not the one for us, obviously. And these people, these salespeople, they just pull their hair out. They don't know what to do with us, you know. But anyway, so now we've got a top-of-the-line gas Winnebago 2,038-foot Adventure, nice motorhome, brand new, top-of-the-line gas. We need a diesel motorhome. Because we live in the thing. I mean, we need the thing that can handle better the roads, you know, and such. And the diesel and the air brakes and air suspension, and they're just built to last more than a gas is. Well, we've got the top of the line gas. The market is here. And the entry-level diesel market is here. We cannot bridge this gap. We can't save enough money to make that gap. We've got a problem. The more, if we go an extra year to save a little more to bridge that gap, the gap's now widened because ours has just lost value. And so it's just, we're never going to be able to bridge that gap. So we have relegated the fact that we're just going to wear out gas motorhomes every year and a half or two, and we'll just have to get another one and start over. And then this event happened. Now things have changed. Well, it put us in a different state, in a different road, in a different frame of mind, at a different time. Everything's different now all of a sudden. In fact, it was still drivable, even the frame and everything. It was all separated, the windshields cracked, glass shattered outside, and it happened to be right near a lumber yard type thing. So we got a piece of plywood, cut it out the shape of the side of the thing, and screwed it into the walls, you know, so put duct tape over it so it wouldn't leak water and air as we're going down the road. You know, the law says you have to have a rear view mirror. Doesn't say it has to work. So we have we screwed this mirror back in the side of the thing, just dangling there, you know. Here we go down the road. So we show up, you know, we're going down the road and whole different frame of mind, different time, different place, different. Well, I went to this RV place because I needed some parts. We have a serious problem on our hands. And I go in there and I'm just looking. I wanted to look at some motorhomes. They had a nice big lot, you know, out in Tucson, Arizona. And so anyway, I wanted to look at some of the stuff. And at this particular place, you couldn't go walk the lot without a sales rep. So I just said, okay, I'll take a sales rep, you know, whatever. So we go out there. And as the salesman came up to me, I said, listen, if I'm not a customer. If you guys are on a list and you happen to be next, don't take me because I'm not buying anything. I just want to see what you have. And you got to be with me so I can go see. He said, no problem. So here we go. We go riding through there, golf cart, you know. And I see this motorhome. I said, that's kind of nice. Let's stop. I want to look at that. So I look at this thing. I look at it and I say, you know, this is nice. I'm going to get my wife and come back. Well, we got back, but it was too late. They'd already closed or right at closing, so we couldn't go drive it or whatever. So I said, we'll be back in the morning. So we go back in the morning. We're driving this thing, and we drove a couple of them. And, you know, 2 days have gone by now, and we're sitting in this guy's office about ready to sign. We're buying a motorhome. And I got this hot flash that came across me like you can't imagine. And it just whoosh. And about the same time, my wife got the same thing. She said, and I looked at, and I said, oh no. I said, do you remember what I said when I first came in here? He said, yeah, you said you're not a customer. I said, oh, I'm so glad you remember that. I said, listen, there's something I didn't tell you. You can kick me out of here literally with your shoe. You can call me every name in the book if you want to, but there's something I haven't told you. And I wasn't trying to hide anything. I can't hide it, but I didn't come in as a customer and we got wrapped up in this thing. I said, our motorhome is wrecked. He said, oh. Well, is it your fault? Was it your fault? And I said, well, no. I mean, this other guy, he hit us. And I mean, you know, he said, well, do you have an insurance adjuster's name and you know, a phone number? I said, yeah. So he said, just give us that. We'll trade it in like nothing went wrong. I said, okay. So we buy this motorhome. Folks, that guy ended up giving us about $20,000 more for that motorhome than we bought it for 2 years earlier. And it's wrecked. And we got in our first entry-level diesel motorhome. I'm telling you, if people will just let God be God and just trust God, no matter what it is, God will work out things that we don't even know is coming around the corner. We can't plan for it because we don't even know it exists yet. But that's the way things are. I'm telling you, it is just, it's just so many things. Anyway, back to the issue. Hey, there are big dogs and little bitty dogs, but they're still dogs. They're never going to evolve into bumblebees or mosquitoes, or they're going to stay dogs. You know, there are all sorts of varieties of corn, but you can crossbreed corn from now to forever. You will never get a nectarine to grow on a corn stalk. It can't happen. You will not get a tomato vine to produce a watermelon. They won't grow there. I mean, can you imagine, folks? I mean, just think about this now. There are varieties of cattle from the cattle kind. There are varieties of orchid from the orchid kind. There are varieties of strawberry from the strawberry kind. There are varieties of everything from within their own kind. You see, God says everything is going to reproduce after its own, and that's exactly what the evidence shows. There's never anything otherwise. You can crossbreed cows from now to the cows come home. You'll never get a cow the size of this room. It can't happen. There's a genetic code locked in, you see. In fact, if you get too far from the genetic code, you get mutations. Here's an example, a two-headed calf. He's dead. Here's another one, a six-legged calf. He's dead. A two-headed calf. He's dead. Now think about this a minute. You can be a cow with an extra one or two of something that you already have, and you're not going to survive. You could be, but wait a minute, do you realize the implications of a statement, all the many forms go back to the same common ancestor? Do you realize the incredible amount of change that had to happen and work when you can't even get an extra something you already have and not work? That doesn't make any sense, you see. There's no evidence for what they're teaching. Look at this, even this textbook. This is a single snake with two heads, a two-headed snake. Mutations such as these rarely survive because the internal organs are often greatly deformed and therefore weaker and more vulnerable. Well, no kidding. He's more vulnerable. This guy's going to starve trying to figure out where to go to eat. Taco Bell, McDonald's, Taco Bell, McDonald's, Taco Bell, McDonald's, Taco Bell, McDonald's. It's a mutation. It's harmful. You know, folks, natural selection is always a loss of information. Now think about this. They say evolution happened by means of natural selection. That's not possible. If something is naturally selected out, it's no longer alive. It can't pass on its genetics. It's dead. If something is selected for survival, the other is out. It's no longer alive to pass on its genetics. If you have a population of wolf and you have a population of bunny rabbit, the wolf are going to naturally select the bunny rabbit out of here. The bunny rabbit's no longer alive to pass on his genetics. He's dead. The wolf are going to have wolf for babies. There's nothing new put into the thing to make it turn into something else. The only net effect is the bunny rabbits are gone. You have a loss of information, never a gaining. But that's it never works out the way they want us to believe. Anyway, you don't have to raise your hand. Just yell it out. When a fish in your fish tank dies, what happens to that fish? What happens to the fish? Okay, it floats and rots and stinks. What else? It decays. You take it out what? What's the last step?
Flush it down the toilet.
Now, folks, do you realize this is science? You have observed this with your own eyes. You maybe had your hand on the net to scoop the thing out. When a fish dies in your fish tank, it goes belly up, floats to the top, gets kind of grayish, white, flaky, stinks, you know, rots, decays, other fish see it and eat on it, and then you scoop it out, flush it. All right, check this textbook out. Curtis Barnes' biology textbook shows a picture of a fossil of a fish eating another fish. And look what the text says. About 50 million years ago, this perch, that's the big one, unable to swallow or dislodge the herring, that's the little one, it had voraciously attacked, suffocated, and sank to the bottom of the lake in which it lived. Lake sediments built up year after year, eventually dried, preserving the bones and the limestone. These fossils were found in the Green River Formation, southwestern Wyoming. It's now dry, blah, blah, blah. Now, wait a minute. It says about 50 million years ago, which is pure belief only. Nobody was there to see that. You can only believe that. It says this perch attacked this little herring and it suffocated. It couldn't breathe. It suffocated and sank to the bottom of the lake in which it lived. Now, everybody knows when a fish dies, it first goes belly up, floats to the top. And then it says lake sediments built up year after year. Now, hang on a second. Is a dead fish going to lay on the bottom of the lake for years? And then it says it eventually dried. I've got a question about that one. Have you ever noticed when you're running late to work, you know, you just come out of the shower, your hair's wet, just go to the fish tank and go, dry your hair right out every time, you know? Folks, that's nonsense, you know? Anybody that knows anything about this kind of thing knows that's not true, but that's what's being taught. It's incredible. You know, this idea of a fish in a fish is actually quite a common find. Hey, think about this. It's 102 outside. You're running, playing a frisbee, throwing a football, you're mowing the yard, just jogging, just out there. Yeah, it's 102. It's hot. You go up and grab a hold of a tree limb that you can reach. It's in 102 also. And you grab that tree limb is cool. You break that tree limb off and you put it on the ground, you go feel that tree limb 2 minutes later. Same limb is now warm. What happened? The only thing that changed is you just removed the life from that limb. Folks, once the life is removed from anything, the decay process immediately kicks in. That stuff is, everybody in this room has seen a tree limb out in the woods out there somewhere in the field. It is not going to lay there for millions and millions of years and slowly turn to stone. The more time that goes by, the more it rots away, or other things eat it away. Same with a dead animal inside of the road out in the field. The more time that goes by, the more it's gone. Time is not a friend to any of the evolutionary processes that they want to claim, stake claim on. It's not true. The more time that goes by, the more the item is rotted away. It's not going to hang around for millions of years. If it's going to happen, it has to be quickly or it won't happen at all. These two pieces are in the museum out there. These two pieces are down in this tray down here. Leaves turned to stone. Not just imprints of leaves, but in fact that one on the back side, three distinct levels of leaves. It's actually full of them all the way through, but leaves turned to stone. Well, wait a minute. We have a little camp up in northern New Hampshire and people come from all over the place to see the pretty leaves turn color. And after they turn the pretty color...
We'll be hearing more from creation science evangelist Steve Grohman as we play for our listening audience the audio from A Creation Seminar. Listen for it next week. Also, we encourage you to log on to Steve's website at www.creationseminar.net. Make a note and check it out before our next broadcast, www.creationseminar.net.
Thank you for listening. You can reach us online at cac.us.com. Catch the Voice of Truth broadcast each Sunday morning at 11:30 right here on Talk Radio 103.3 WAJR-FM.